Hey guys, it's your favorite sisters with the Confessions of a Reluctant Caregiver show on UK Health Radio. On the show, you'll hear caregivers confessing the good, the bad, and the completely unexpected. You're guaranteed to relate, be inspired, leave with helpful tips and resources, and of course, laugh. Now, let's jump right in to today's guest confession. Hey, Jay.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
I'm hoping you don't sing.
I'm thinking about singing. Oh, it's too late. I already sang.
I know. It's kind of early. So I'm like, please don't sing.
You know, I could sing. It's a beautiful morning.
Okay. Well,
okay. I'm going to stop because this is not the voice, although we do love the voice.
You lost.
I think we've got an amazing guest today. And Jay, we have a boy.
I know. You want me to do my voice? It's a boy.
I love when we have men caregivers on because they're really, I think people don't think of males as caregivers.
That's right.
And every time we have a male on, I feel like that's a win for the 40% of male caregivers out, especially just in the US, who are providing care. And I think these stories are super important because it's a different perspective.
It is
such a different perspective, a different experience. And I'm super excited. And we have a really awesome guest. And I want you to tell everybody about him.
Okay. And I'm going to keep it short. That way I don't tell the whole story, Natalie, because you'll yell at me.
The whole story,
I know. Okay, guys. Today, I would like to say that we are absolutely honored to have Ed Devaney with us. He has an immense number of professional accomplishments. I'll say that out. Especially leading an organization that means so much to these sisters. So it's really no surprise that he also has a caregiving story. His mother was diagnosed and lived with both Alzheimer's and dementia for years, and his father couldn't take care of her in the ways that she really needed. But that put her in the care of Ed and his sisters. Yes, sisters.
Oh, he's got sisters.
Yeah, I know. With a career and a family of his own, obviously that just shows that caregiving does not wait. Ed, we are so honored to have you here with us. Thank you so much.
Yay!
Natalie and JJ, it's nice to see you. I don't think we've seen each other since New Orleans, correct?
That's right.
It's been a minute. I feel like people are like, ooh, and then what happened?
You were in New Orleans.
We were working hard. So
that's true.
But I mean, New Orleans was nice. And it's a little So Ed, we're super happy to have you on the show. And I think where we want to start is where I always start is we want everyone to know about you. So we always start off with saying, tell us a little bit about your background. And I love to say, start from the beginning, you were born. And then, you know, tell us about family life and that sort of thing. Walk us up to care.
I appreciate the opportunity to join you. And just reflecting back, we're all born in Chicago. I am, to your point, is raised with a mother and father, two older sisters. So I'm number three in the birth order.
The baby.
I'm the baby. Yeah. And I would characterize our growing up as everything was about competition. In the family, it was all about competing. It was every night playing different board games, card games. We were all very active in sports and competing. And it was really our mom that pushed us that route.
I love that.
And, you know, while I actually got relocated, 2010 to Charlotte, North Carolina, shortly after that is really where my mom was diagnosed with dementia and Alzheimer's. So it was, I want to be very clear up front. My sisters carried most of this burden. I played a role in it, but they, as the two sisters, they really carried the majority of the daily taxing, I would say, it had on our collective lives.
Yeah. Mm. I love when, I also jump in and say that, I love when siblings, though, are able to give credit to the other because we're able to do that with Emily. A lot of times families like, well, I did this part and I did this part. But when you're able to say that, my sisters carried a big part. You don't know how much that means to the other sisters, the other siblings, is to get credit for that. And so kudos for that.
So I have a question because I'm going to back you up a little bit because I need to know a little bit more. So you were raised, what's the age difference with you and your siblings?
So I was born 1975.
Oh, clearly the best year ever. Me too.
Yeah. And Kelly is 3 years older than me. And Mary Kate is 4 years older than me.
Okay. So it's similar to us. We're all 2 years apart. So we support that. So you had normal childhood. I love that you were competitive. I think that's super fun. It sounds like a close-knit family. And went to college. I'm assuming met wife, because I know you have also two girls and a boy. So tell us a little bit, like you got married. Tell us a little bit about work your way up to it, because you can't leave out the juicy part.
So I would say I graduated college, moved downtown Chicago, happened to be at a party with some of my friends that I knew in college that was up in Milwaukee. I happened to meet my wife, who was dating someone else at that point.
Oh, that's okay.
I consistently asked her out. She consistently shot me down.
Oh, that's awesome. We like her.
We like her already.
And eventually I wore her down for, she said yes. And gosh, in 2005, we finally married.
Oh, I love that. Years. I love persistence.
I know. Yeah.
Then children come along because you're working at this time, right? You've got your job. You all have life going on. Now, are your siblings all in Chicago too still? Did everybody stay in Chicago until you got moved? I know you said you got moved 15 years ago to North Carolina.
A big Irish Catholic family. Everyone still lives in Chicago and still has no idea how I could ever have taking a job outside of not only the city, but the state.
Abandoned them.
I knew you were Irish Catholic. I just felt it because of Chicago, but you do only have, there's only three of you. So I don't want to talk to your parents about that, but I mean, it's not your traditional. I mean, we met up with Trisha the other day and recorded hers, and she was a good Irish Catholic family and they were six.
it's interesting because if you think of the theme of what you're doing is my mother was a caregiver for her mother.
Oh yeah.
Ah.
Her father had issues with alcohol, and he died very young, which then meant her and her siblings all had to go out and get jobs much younger, get their degrees along the way while working full time so they could pay the mortgage.
Yeah. Mm. We see so many families like that just depending on backgrounds. And there's just a trend, family culture on families that will step in versus families that don't think that's kind of a responsibility. And it's a big cultural thing a lot of times. So.
This is 100% factual. Every single day when we were little, we saw our family. We saw our grandmas. We saw our aunts, our uncles, our cousins every single day.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
That was ingrained in us.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that speaks a lot. And I think, you know, honestly, and we've talked about this in the past, you know, as our society continues to advance, we at times with technology, we think this is great. I mean, we're talking to you, you're in another city and JJ's in a different city and I'm in a different city. And technology has the ability to bring us together, but it also has the ability to kind of pull us apart. And I love that you all were the same way as we were growing up. We had 11 cousins every Sunday. We all went to same church. We all went and played after. We ate dinner after on Sunday. Yeah. I can even tell you it was roast and mashed potatoes. I mean, it was always consistent. There's something to be said for that. And so it sounds like care was modeled for you growing up by not only just your mom and helping to support her parent, but also her siblings. And so everybody just sounds like it was a part of it.
It 100% was.
Oh, wow. So you and your wife, Michelle. I love Michelle already. I love Michelle already because she played hard to get. She was like, you're cute.
It was that competitive thing. I think that's
it is a competitive thing. Honestly, I love that. And I clearly, good choice, my friend. But then, so then you start having kids and you're advancing in your career and that sort of thing. So I know you've got, is Grace the oldest?
She is the oldest. We just dropped her off at University of Tennessee.
Oh, we're all false.
Yeah, we're not going to scream and yell, but you know.
I'm singing in my head. Da, da, da. I'm sorry.
Rocky Top. So, okay.
I know we could sing Rocky Top. What point does care come in? Because you've got a good job, you're advancing in your career, but at what point does care start coming in your life? About how old were you, if you don't mind me asking?
I think it's a great question. And I think to fully understand at least my story on this, you have to go back just a little bit further. So my wife and I got married in 2005, which is the exact year that I joined. So I joined Caremark, CBS Caremark in August of 2005. Okay. My wife and I got married October of 2005. So my wife has been with the CVS Caremark journey the entire way. In 2010, I was asked to really take the first big step in my career, which was becoming a director, running the East Coast for some employer customers. Mm-hmm. And that was really a fork in the road for us, is to exactly how you all grew up. We were a tight-knit family. No one lived more than, you know, a 10-minute car ride away from each other. Mm-hmm. And for me to pick up and leave for North Carolina to pursue something professionally was unheard of. Yeah. If you think about growing up in my family, most aren't doing white collar jobs. You know, I thought my professional track growing up was Chicago policeman, a fireman, electrician, carpenter. That was always my path.
Yeah.
So for me to go outside of the traditional path and for me to leave Chicago was a big deal. Yeah. And it's interesting, I only bring it up because I probably would have said no to it if it wasn't for my mom.
Wow.
And it was her that said, no, you have to go chase. That's your job. You have, by 2010, we had already had two kids. And her view was, you can't be this to our family. You have to be someone different for your family. And this is one of the steps you have to take.
Oh, I love that.
What did your mom do? Was she a stay-at-home mom or what did she do? What kind of drove that competitiveness or that success in her? What did she do?
She was a stay-at-home mom for our life growing up. Yeah. So we were around her breakfast, lunch, dinner every single day.
Okay.
But I think there is, you know, my father graduated from Kellogg, Northwestern.
Okay.
He was extremely smart.
Yeah.
But my mom was the smartest of the two. And she also was the one that had the drive, the push. Yeah. I would say my dad was a silent role model. My mom was a very vocal and she had very strong opinions.
Okay.
I like
her. Like our family. I like that. Nellie.
Very, very. And you didn't cross her.
Mm-mm. Yeah, I get my directness honest is what I'll say. I'm just like my mom.
Which is good and bad. I'm not sure. I don't ask her for an honest opinion. I'm like, just like mom. If I don't want to know, don't ask Nellie or my mom.
Nellie, to your point. So I went this weekend. I flew into Chicago. I took my son to the Cub game, but we spent a lot of time with my sister, my nieces. And my sister, the middle child, has 100% turned into my mother.
She's yellow mustard, man. The oldest is always grape pecan. The middle is always yellow mustard. You're going to be like, yeah, Nellie and my sister need to get together. You're the baby. And we always joke with Emily, like she was the baby angel. She never did anything wrong. And being a boy, I mean, that really ups the A game. I mean, your dad loved that. Our dad wanted boys, but he couldn't even get boy dogs. And so, So then you moved to North Carolina, and I think it's important. I'm glad that you qualified like the relationship that you had with your mom between you and your siblings and that, because I think it really does lean into people being like, whoa, I can't believe you did that to help. And so I'm actually going to take a pause right now because I feel like it's a natural break, Jay, because I want to go into care when we come back.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
All right, everybody, we are back with Ed Devaney. We've gotten to this point where he leaves the homeland, Chicago, and he goes to the South. I'm not sure. That's kind of question. He goes to the South.
Oh, he goes to the South.
He goes to North Carolina. So at what point you're here, you're in the South, you got this fantastic promotion, you're growing in this career. When does care come along? What is this journey that you're on? What are the next steps?
It coincided with the exact time I entered into pursuing my MBA from Wake Forest.
Okay.
So I was working full time. I had actually accepted a couple promotions along that way. This is now, I believe, 2015.
Okay.
And that's when we got the feedback that she actually went in for a surgery. And when she came out of the surgery, she was never the same. She would forget little things along the way, but when she came out of that surgery, we still don't fully understand why, is she went from maybe on a scale of 1 to 10, having some signs of dementia, to being jumping from 1 to 6. And it happened kind of overnight, which was a little bit, for our view, very unexpected. And that created mass changes, not only for my parents, my sisters, but for me as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
let's kind of jump into that. What you see something's going on with your mom. Was this like a routine surgery or was there concern? Because I know at that point, because you're the same age as me, although I'll say I'm December 30th. So unless you're December 30th, I get to make you a teeny bit older. But but you're I mean, I'm getting ready to turn 50 this year. So you're 40, if you really think about it. You're 40 years yep. old. You're ultimately you're going to be defined in this case as a sandwich generation caregiver. Your sisters may fall in the same kind of field where you've got children. And
exactly.
You start looking at what your parents look at and what's going on with them. Your mom goes into surgery and comes out and things feel different. What is the conversation between you and the siblings and then you and the entire family unit? Because this is what a lot of times does not happen is the conversations.
We had a lot of conversation. I would say there was a lot of friction in the conversation because we all had independent thoughts of what was best for our mom.
Yeah.
So we proceeded with, all right, let's see if Dad can do this. And we would give Dad, you know, my father, a list of things he would have to do. And then we would show up. And, you know, every day, my sisters would be there. Every weekend or every other weekend, I would be there. And you'd ask, hey, did mom eat breakfast today? I don't know. Well, heck, Dad, like, you need to do this stuff. Mm-hmm. And we chased that down. And there was a lot of frustration, I would say, over the years, especially my oldest sister with my father. Mm-hmm. She had a lot of frustration. She's the type A out of the entire family. I don't know, JJ, if that resonates or not.
Yeah.
Oh, she's always in charge.
I don't know if you noticed, Ed, even though I'm the loudest, she's always in charge. And so I don't know if your sister's always in charge. If you're just like, because we fall, it's funny how sibling dynamics are. And if you want to hit on that for a sec too, because Emily and I, our parents were younger when they married and they had us, mom was 19, 21, 23.
But, oh, wow.
And so they yeah. were, our mom's only 71, for example. She just turned 71. But JJ was always in charge of us because my parents both worked. We were definitely a blue collar family. My mom worked for the government. Our dad worked for the government. But we just naturally fall in that. And we fell into those same kind of structure into adults because JJ is the primary preferred of our mom as a caregiver. Is your oldest sister the primary between the three of you? Because there's definitely differences between primaries versus who's really taking the lead.
So she's going to kill me for saying this, but she always wanted to be the lead.
Oh,
and she would make herself be the lead.
Okay.
And Kelly and I, the middle and me would be like, all right, here, just let her go and we'll fill in the holes.
Okay. When I get stressed out and I'm griping about being the lead, Natalie and Emily are undermining. Like they're doing their thing. They're like, let her go. She's got the guilt martyr cape on.
That's true.
It is true. And she won't let anybody help at times. And I will say this. So do you all have side text groups where you and Kelly will have a conversation about your older sister and then you and your older sister? Because we totally do that.
It's not a family unless you do it.
That's exactly right. Thank you. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. There's nothing better than strict. It's almost like a game of Survivor in making decision making. Like, hey, did you know that JJ wants to do this, Emily? And Emily's like, well, I think about this. And I'm like, ooh. Let's do, and then JJ and I'll be like, oh, Jay, what do you think about this?
So, look at that, Jay. They're making it your idea.
Okay.
Totally.
Yeah,
totally.
I know they're playing me. But okay, it's so also the same with our mom. I'll throw that out there. Oh. She plays all of us, Ed. She will message me and say something. Then she'll message Natalie and say something different. And I'm like, did mom message you this? She was like, she's totally
911.
She's playing you, JJ. You're being guilty. So
yeah. Our mom did the exact same thing.
Oh, nice.
That is fantastic. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I like that. So she knew who to call when she needed something.
Yes.
Yeah.
So how old are your parents? I'm just curious, because you said your dad is, there are some roles that he's kind of like, I don't know if she ate breakfast or not. How old are your parents at that time?
So my mom was born, I had it up on the screen ahead of me. She was born in 1938.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
March 25th of 1938. March 25th. That's why her name is Mary. 9 months before Jesus was born. Like,
oh, wow. I love that. Right. I love that.
Yeah.
So dad's not able to keep up as much conversations that are going on. So what are interventions at that point are you guys thinking that you're going to have to do if you think, hey, I'm not sure that this is his strength area? And I can imagine that being hard because he's the head of the household. I mean,
yep.
He's traditional. Like, I'm sure you all are traditional. We were traditional.
Very traditional.
So
I would say that's where friction hit.
Yeah.
And it was, I guess I didn't realize that during the time, but there was a lot of friction. So look, we grew up with a mom that always said, I never want to be in a home.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't tell you how many times as a kid I committed to that.
I know.
And, you know, so we did, I would stay in my sister's the same way they committed to it. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden we're in the situation of saying, oh my God, like, how do we break the promise we gave to her?
Yeah.
So we did everything possible, right? So we got a live-in nanny. And, you know, my mom could be abrasive. Mm-hmm. So we went through a churn of caregivers lived in the house. And all along this way was we wanted our father to play that nurturing role.
Yeah.
But the reality was I knew it early. He just didn't have it.
Yeah.
That's not who he was. So just give you background on him, because I feel like I'm selling him short.
Yeah.
He grew up, his parents were immigrants from Ireland.
Yeah.
He grew up with nothing. They worked, you know, blue collar jobs. And when he was young, they would give him a quarter and say, hey, go ride the Chicago bus line all day. Like, he just didn't grow up with that nurturing side. And I knew he didn't have it. And we were kind of at this point where I think me and my middle sister connecting the dots here. We would text each other and be like, dad just doesn't have this. This is an uphill battle. Yeah. We're going to lose it. I would say my oldest sister kept fighting it and saying, you need to do this. You need to do that. And she, for lack of a better word, she was a bulldog on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that led to tension with her and my father. And we went through this process. Eventually, my father died prior to my mother.
Mm.
And at that point, my mom's dementia and Alzheimer's was bad. Yeah. Like, give you perspective, she had no idea who I was. She had no idea who my kids were. You know, me being out of town, only there 1 or 2 days a week, she would remember stories about a baseball game I played in when I was 8 years old, but she couldn't remember a conversation I had with her 3 minutes prior to that.
Mm.
So it created a dynamic of we had to bite the bullet. We had to do what we promised we would never do. And gosh, this is almost like a psychiatry session. I never thought about it, but it was honestly, reflecting back, it was probably one of the hardest things I ever did.
We would agree with you. Our mom was the first in our family either side to ever go into skilled nursing. And the feelings that come along with that, there's guilt. JJ's in charge of carrying all the guilt.
Oh, yeah.
She carries that for everybody. But there's guilt because it doesn't make care any less. And so you mentioned, I'd see my mom once or twice, you know, 2 days a week. But you're seeing her not virtually. You're going back and forth. So how did you and your siblings say, we're going to support dad, and this is what the schedule is going to be? Like, oldest sister takes these tasks, middle sister does this, I do this piece. Like, how did you all navigate that out? And what did that look like? Because you flew back and forth. That's what caught me about your attention. You were going back and forth. Was it every week to almost?
Yeah, almost every week I would fly into Chicago. The good thing is in my job, I travel extensively. So I had racked up airline points where I could do it. So, yeah, I mean, I think the way we set it up was Mary Kate and Kelly, they would own the week and I would own the weekends. Yeah. Now, the detriment was at this point, 2015, I had an 8-year-old daughter. I had a 6-year-old daughter and I had a son that was just born. Wow. So you talk about the burden, I think. And I'm sorry, someone is calling me on a cell phone.
It's okay.
Is the burden this put on my wife and my family was a really big deal. And I know my sisters feel the exact same way. They miss sporting events. They missed activities at school. The normal stuff your parents do. When you step into a caregiver role, that is a priority. And that then results in you missing a lot of things that I kind of look back on it. I don't regret it, mm-hmm. but I am sad I miss a lot of things.
Yeah. Well, and I think your position in itself required you to travel a lot. So there's always the normal guilt that comes with that. I mean, I've traveled a lot with positions I've been in where I travel out of state as well. But I didn't have children. And so it's one thing, I think it's one thing to miss your spouse and what that impact of that travel and care has on that relationship. But it's also another, the impact that it has on your children as well. What conversation did you and your wife have about this? Did she get at some point like, buddy, it's tired over here. Eyes tired. I would love to see you on the weekend. Because, I mean, you're saying every weekend.
My classes at Wake Forest were Mondays and Wednesday nights. There you go, JJ. That's your call out for Winston-Salem.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, but that executive MBA program, I totally understand. So that I got that. That's a commitment in itself. So
I would fly out almost every Monday night after. I'd fly back into Charlotte. I wouldn't even see my family. I would go to class on Wednesday. I'd fly back out. I'd get home on Friday. And I would have one night with my wife, one night with my kids. And then Saturday morning, first thing, I would fly out to be there for the weekend and, you know, fly back Sunday night have dinner with the family, and then it was a rinse and repeat, the exact same thing week in and week out.
How are you physically? Because this, for me, just listening to you is exhausting.
I'm exhausting. I'm exhausted for you right now.
What? Because I'm wondering, first of all, is work like, oh, you've shared this and everybody's like, okay, Ed, you can back off a little bit. You know, we know that you're having a hard time, first of all, you know, take a break. But how are you taking care of yourself?
Well, I'll look at it this way. I never told anyone I was really doing this stuff. So anyone I worked with had no idea. My friends had no idea. But it was also the time I actually in my life started getting very healthy.
Okay.
That was the point in time. It was after I finished my MBA that I said, I don't want to wake up at 5 a.m., but I'm going to go to the gym every day at 5 a.m. And to this day, now I'm not 6 days a week like I was initially, but I'm still four or five. Mm-hmm. And that is just something that if you look at, I look at how my parents retired, what should have been their best years, and them physically not taking care of themselves, they are what I don't want to be.
Yeah.
And that is the drive I have every single day when I wake up.
You think that gave you a little bit of control too? That was one thing you could control. I can go to the gym.
I never thought of it that way, but you're probably right.
I can control my food. That is, you know, a couple of different things.
Yeah.
Especially in a time that feels, in the times that feel so chaotic, when Jason and I were in New York for his treatments, there were things that I had to do that was like, I can do this thing. I can control this, because there's these times when you have no control. And I can imagine going and seeing the toll that it takes on you emotionally to visit your mom for those 2 days, her not to really recognize you, and how to navigate through that. And then all the other things, navigating the relationships with your sisters, and how do we do this? And what's this? You know, I will say that when we had to finally make the decision and have that conversation with mom about going into skilled nursing, it was, we agree. It's the hardest decision you ever have to make, because that's not what you do. That's not what everybody wants you to do. But
how did you guys make that decision? I'm curious, because we fought. My sisters and I fought about this. Did you guys fight, or was it a logical conversation?
It was, and you mentioned it, and I actually, every time I tear up, we're like, Kleenex, you can sponsor us. I tear up when we talk about it still, and it's been years, Ed, because we promised we would never do it. And for me, I feel like I failed my dad, because it was my responsibility to take care of her. We went in, Emily was taking care of her 24/7, basically. We had tried that for 7 months, and we realized that we could not take care of the needs that she had.
And there just wasn't enough people. There wasn't enough people. Human capital to be able to do it. And the system had worked against us.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, she needed more care, and we were failing her, and we had to have that discussion with her. But it's still today. She always asked me when I talked to her, do you think maybe I could go out and live in assisted living, or I could come out again, and we can't care for her? And so at every day, it's still hard, Ed. And it is. We finally, though, and we have a system.
You're going to make me cry.
I'm sorry. We have a system where, although we may disagree about something, when a decision is made, we go along, we make the decision, and we follow through with it. We can't argue about it.
The skilled nursing wasn't actually the argument. It was, our mom had been in assisted living, and she'd had 3 failed placements because they felt like they couldn't meet her needs, otherwise known as she had showed her rear. And so she was also a touch difficult. I get it, honest. Emily quit her job, moved from Indiana, and moved back home to care for our mom. And so we pulled her back out. And the reason we did that, though, is, and then again, this is why we have such a great relationship with you guys, is because mom was able to get a Duopa pump. It was only able to be given to her if she was in the home or in a skilled nursing. So she couldn't have this magic pump in assisted living by regulation, by stupid regulation, because I'm like, anybody can clean out flush out the device. But Emily quit her job, which is not uncommon for caregivers, and moved in with our mom, but then we didn't have the support. I'm the one who fought against it and said, this is a bad idea. Turn around, don't drown. But ultimately, JJ and Emily ganged up against me, and they said, this is what we think we want to do. And you have to let Emily try. And the answer was, okay. And there is no, I told you so, because there is no win. Like, you don't want them to fail. Being right means that somebody fails. So when you guys, who was the one who was felt like the holdout? And the question would have been for me would have been, are you moving mom in with you?
We had these conversations. I would say we did everything possible to avoid breaking the promise that we all made to her.
Yeah.
And this is young. Like, we were like, she would tell me, Eddie, at 6 years old, if something ever happens to me, I'm not going. Like, promise me. Because she had seen it with some of her aunts and uncles. so we thought about it. I mean, I had, my wife is fantastic, right? It's the fact that she let me do this. She even allowed me to even offer us an option for her to come live with us.
Wow.
But that didn't work out. It's big family, Chicago. Yeah. She's not leaving Chicago. That's off the table. You're coming to us.
Yeah.
You guys probably understand how that dynamic works out as well.
Absolutely. Yes.
So we did, I would say we exhausted every option, living with my sisters, living in, none of it, we knew none of it would work. And we probably should have made that decision 6 to 9 months earlier, but really the impetus was we grew up in a split level, 1,100 square foot home, is we were worried she would fall and break her hip.
Oh, yeah.
And in my head, as soon as, you know, you're pushing close to 80 and you break your hip, that's not a good spot to be.
Yeah, that's right.
So that was when we collectively said, we have to do it.
Yeah. So I we're over our time for our break because I'm like, this is what happens. I'm like, oh. So we're going to take a break, Jay, and we're going to come right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If you see the letters AIDA, do you immediately think of the opera by Verdi? AIDA is also an advertising acronym for those iconic Mad Men days. A is for attention, I is for interest, D is for desire, A is for action. This process is a timeless truism for making a sale. Fortunately, if your product or service is health-related, we can offer you guaranteed access to a global audience with a high interest in health, healthy lifestyle, and contemporary well-being. UKHealthRadio.com has a regular monthly audience of around 1.5 million health-conscious people. And Health Triangle, its award-winning monthly magazine, has around 20,000 paying subscribers. Find out more about both at UKHealthRadio.com. Let's all put health first.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with the skin comfort formula online and in stores now.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
All right, everybody, we are back here with Ed Devaney, and we've gotten into some tough topics. And one of them, of course, is making that decision to put that loved one in a skilled nursing facility. And you guys all know that's a tough topic for me. Ed, from there, What happens? I know that your mom is in really advanced Alzheimer's and dementia. Where does life go from there? What ultimately occurs?
My sisters visited her still every day. At that point, I probably wasn't flying in every weekend. It was probably every other weekend. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I would make a point to go see her. And look, you're having conversations with someone who has no idea who you are.
I know.
Which makes it hard. But there was glimmers of she would say things. Yeah. And I would sit there and I would just laugh. I'm like, that's who she is.
Yeah. You still see parts of her. Yeah. Did you mentioned, and I think this is, let's get into some, I don't think it's a male stereotype, but I think it happens more with males than females because we're awfully chatty. You mentioned that you didn't really tell your friends about this. You didn't talk to your friends. I mean, I know you talked to your wife. I know your kids saw you, saw this going on, but this feels very close. You know what I mean? Like it's very kept tight, close to you, because this is, in the end, it's always personal. And for me, I didn't even talk to people about Jason having cancer, except for a small select group of people, considering what I do from a business development standpoint, like 100 of my closest friends. But I mean, it was not put out there for the world to see because it made me feel very vulnerable. It made me feel like open up for scrutiny of, am I making the right decisions with him? That sort of thing. Who did you talk to at this point? Did you talk to your friends about it? Did you talk more at work about it? Because you've been going through this for a while now.
I didn't talk to anyone. The way we were raised was you put one foot in front of the other and you go. And no matter what, so it was funny. In advance of this, I actually pulled up the eulogy I wrote for my mom's funeral. And I think a lot of the way I behaved, and I didn't really recognize it, until I reflected back on the eulogy, it was all about quit your boohooing. I'll give you a story. My sophomore year of high school, one of my good friends committed suicide. Mm. I kid you not, 24 hours later, my mom is in my ear saying, look, life is for the living. You have to move on. Like, that was the way she instilled. And it was quit your boohooing. Life is here, whether you are prepared for it or not, and you need to go. The more you think about this stuff, the more you absorb it, the worse off you're going to be. So just go. Now, I don't think the way I handled it was right.
Yeah.
I probably should have talked to people. My wife was really the only one I ever had a conversation with.
Yeah.
And if people in work would ask me, I would do my damnedest to make that a very short conversation and move on to something else.
Yeah. You know, I think that's important. I think because, I mean, my experience, especially as an executive, I mean, I was had just been named CEO of a behavioral health company. Jason was diagnosed on February 14th, and actually March the 4th, it was confirmed.
On Valentine's Day?
Oh, yeah. Nothing says happy Valentine's Day like, hey, we think.
Oh, wow.
You don't forget, by the way. And then I was named CEO on April 1st, which seemed appropriate as well, because that's April Fool's Day. And I thought I could do it all. I mean, if I'm really honest about it, I thought I'd do it all. And I, my backgrounds, people were like, oh, your background's so cool. And I'm like, yeah, it's real. It's the background of, that's the Chrysler building right behind me. And because I'm on the 15th floor and Jason's getting an infusion. And so
wow.
I think about those kinds of things. And so my question to you is how to, and I'm going to tell you, I quit my job 6 months after we got back. I was different.
Really?
Yes, I did. Like most people would be like, I can't believe you quit your job. You've worked to this pinnacle. You wanted to be CEO. I planned on being the CEO. I planned on retiring from Intercept. And I was so different. And so for me, it changed the complete trajectory of my life. But I also tried to take my lived experience and apply that into the workplace because I knew my privilege. I knew not many people moved to New York City and right. live in Midtown so you can get treatment at the number one place in the world, basically, which is Memorial Sloan Kettering for head and neck.
Sure. I just met with them.
Yeah. And I'm going to tell you, they are amazing. But there is something, but I knew that I had to do something different for my employees. And I had an owner, respectfully to him, who just, we weren't aligned any longer. And my experience, I felt like I needed to take that experience and do something with it. You know, Jay, I know that we'll be like, oh my gosh, our time is almost up, which clearly means it's time for your favorite.
I have so many. I write because I have all these questions. I'm not a tech person.
Uh oh, I don't know what's coming up.
I know.
You've got two sisters, and you're like, oh god.
We called your sisters in advance,
so I'm going to show my wake force.
Thank you. I like that.
Thank you. So I have actually two questions. I'll try to be good, and they are good. They're not bad. Have you had a discussion with your own children? Have you placed any type of what you think were obligations on them? Or what are your thoughts about yours and your wife's life as you get older?
You know, it's interesting. The conversations I'm having with my daughters now. So just going back is I just dropped her off 2 weeks ago at Knoxville.
Yeah.
And the conversations I'm having with her are really almost apologetic. That, look, I know I missed a lot of your life. And that's work, that's, you know, what I had to do for my family back in Chicago. And my goal in life is to be really active when you have kids. I want to be front and center. I don't care what it takes. I'm going to be there. Whether I'm going to you, you're coming to me, and my wife and I are already talking about what's next in our life. Do we keep this house? Do we buy a farm and have ATVs and horses to get our grandkids to come in?
Super coming down there. We're your honorary sisters. You have no clue. We're like, oh, we could shut up. Why are the sisters here, Michelle?
But, you know, I'm 50. My wife is, she turns 52 on Friday. Oh. And, you know, these are the conversations we're starting to have. So I guess to sum up, JJ, is I feel a little guilt in the family, but you know, how can I make up for that? This past weekend, I took my son to Chicago. I do a daddy-daughter weekends with my individual, you know, with Grace and Chloe. So I'm trying to find, while I don't have all the time in the world, I'm trying to find meaningful time, purposeful one-on-one time.
Yeah. Expectations that they will do the same, though. Have you ever had the discussion to say to them, I never want to go into a home, or is that something they know?
I was trying to duck that question.
Come on. Oh, I didn't realize that. If you don't want to answer, that's okay.
You don't have to answer it.
No, I'll answer it. Yeah. It I have not.
Yeah. Something nobody wants to
I have not had that conversation.
I understand.
And I think it's because of the guilt that I still carry.
Yeah,
I know.
You know, I think, Ed, there's so many people who don't want to have the conversation for many reasons. And, you know, JJ and I were just, we were just talking about it the other day. Here's a spoiler alert. JJ and Dexter don't have everything set up the way they need it to because Dexter's not ready to talk about it.
And he's 65. He doesn't want to plan for me.
I don't want to say he's decrepit, but it's fine. He's JJ's husband. And so,
he doesn't want to talk about the final wills, estates, or anything.
Doesn't want to talk about any of it. And like, so whereas Jason and I'm like, I hit it head on. I'm like, cause we don't have kids. And I'm like,
that's right.
We got to find other people's kids to help us. Cause I mean, I've got to be a good aunt. I mean, I'm trying to woo my other nieces and my honorary godchildren, but I think those are important things to have those discussions sooner than later. Cause I'm going to tell you, when you get cancer at 55, you don't expect it.
Scary.
It is scary. And I think that's why it's so, we preach it over and over again to everybody, but just understand it's hard. It's not just easy. You just go and do it because these are hard conversations because of our past experiences.
My wife and I, to your guys' point, we just started having these conversations. My view on life has always been earn, save, and invest.
Yeah.
And now you hit a different point with kids growing up and we have new life insurance, setting up new wills. Mm-hmm. We're in that process right now. And I don't know what your perspective is, but it takes a lot of time to get that done.
Oh, yes, yeah. It does.
It takes a lot of mental energy too. You're kind of like, I'm really thinking about this. Like I'm thinking about ultimately my death and nobody wants to talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
that's
you're
right.
Talking about death here, people. Yeah. Like ultimately you're having to look forward in the sense of looking forward.
Yeah.
Like, and we don't know, no day is guaranteed, but we talk about never aging, but, and that's why we're talking about let's age well.
Yeah.
Age well looks like there were three things. We were at a conference last week, Ed, and I think you guys align with this 100%. We know the importance of the impact of isolation and how that impacts your overall health and wellness. We also
agreed.
Know food and working out, food and fitness. And mm-hmm. The fact when you said, I'm not going to not be healthy, because they talk about your chronological age. Most people are living to be in the U.S. Men, I believe, are 70, in their 70, 74, I believe is what it was. And women live to be 80 and give or take. But their health age stops at about 65. And that just
means right.
when they start feeling more aches and pains. Because I'm telling you right now, friend, I am feeling some aches and pains. But I'll start at 40. It's weird.
Okay. I have one more. We've spent a lot of time with Ed. We love him. But I had one more question, but I probably forgot it, Natalie.
This was it.
It's my whole menopause brain. You don't need to know that, Ed. But anyway, so here it is. You mentioned something earlier and I want people to know about this. You said that sometimes you felt like you didn't do a great job. And there's so many of our listeners that say, I'm not doing a great job. I could have done better. Will you just tell me a little bit about that? The part being, what would you say to somebody out there today that says, I'm not doing a good job?
I throughout the entire process, I thought I failed. I thought I failed my mother. I thought I failed my father. I thought I was failing my sisters. And it was constant, no matter what I did. In my head, it was never enough. And I would say, reflecting on that, I wish I would have pulled up and asked for help. And it's interesting how I lead now. That is, so I probably didn't answer your question right, Natalie, earlier, but that's probably the biggest lesson I had from that.
Mm-hmm.
And it plays out every day in work.
Yeah.
I ask for help all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I ask for help from my wife. I ask for help from my kids, my sisters. I ask for help with all my coworkers that, hey, I'm trying to achieve A, B, and C. I'm stuck on this. You know, how would you think about it? I probably wouldn't have been open. I wouldn't have been as vulnerable without going through that experience. And JJ and Natalie, I don't know what you guys think, but every day I was in that, I felt like I was failing.
Oh.
Even on my mom's, the day she died, I felt like I was failing.
Mm. I feel you. I can tell you every day it felt like I didn't do something well enough. And here's the thing.
Right.
I never saw the things I did well. I just saw the things like I didn't cook this meal, although
right.
everybody who knows me knows I don't cook. And so trust me, my husband's a great cook. You're welcome to come up to Virginia. Everybody's welcome to come to Virginia. It's for lovers. But I focused on the wrong things. And you have to find those moments where there's glimmers, where exactly when you said you'd laugh with your mom, that touched my heart. In the moments that you said you sat by her bedside and she'd say something,
yeah.
There's my mom.
Yeah.
there was a moment for me that I was like, Jason and I were just like everybody else sitting on the river. We were looking at the river at Roosevelt Island, and I felt like normal. I felt like everybody.
So is what I felt, because I know you guys are much more educated on this than I am. Is that common?
Oh, yeah. Oh, every day.
Every day. And the days I get calls from my mom, it was last night even, I'll tell you that. Everybody knows that saliva is really excessive right now. It's overwhelming. And so she calls and she wants me to fix it, and I can't fix it. And I've called and, you know, talked to the doctor. But you take that with you. You know, you go to sleep at night and I've failed that. Why can't I get that fixed? Is there another piece of another component? And, you know, I'll share this with you. There's a fantastic new medicine out for that, even that's a step up from the Duopa pump. Well, now I'm trying to call the insurance companies, you know, because it's not approved. They haven't approved it yet. It hasn't passed. And you're like, I have to work harder. I have to work harder. I'm failing at this. Why can't I figure it out? But I think everybody does. We hear that from so many people, because I think ultimately you want to heal that person. I think ultimately that's where your heart is. And if you can't heal them, then you've failed. And I think that's a big part of it. But I will say to you, because I know what you have done, if you were to just look at one person that you changed us. That day that you helped me, and I don't want to get all teary. Monica knows, you know, your whole staff does, but you changed our lives with helping my mom. And your mom, you did something amazingly right. So you take that home with you. You
always
take that with you.
Yeah, you did.
We appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
You did that. You did that.
No, well, but you did well with your mom. Yeah. And no matter for you and your siblings, no matter all the things that may have not gone the way that you had hoped it for, these siblings are here to say
you did a great job.
You did a great job.
Yeah, you did a great job.
So I'm gonna do the last question.
Oh yeah, it's a fun one.
It's totally fine, because you can tell I always talk the most.
Oh yeah,
my question's always fun, and I had other questions, but I don't care, because this is my favorite question, and I'm mindful of our time.
Yes.
So I always end the show with, tell me what your favorite guilty pleasure is. What is the one thing that you do just for you that brings you joy and makes you smile? What's the thing that you enjoy doing just for you?
That's a great question. And I probably have multiple guilty pleasures, but I love hamburgers.
Oh, who's where? Okay.
So this weekend, you watch the, Dave Portnoy, he does like the pizza tracker. I'm not a big pizza person.
Yeah.
But I monitor like the best hamburgers. So I'll send you guys a picture. We went to Au Chevelle this weekend. They open up at 10 a.m. I got first in line at 9:02 to be first in. And I love a good hamburger. If you ever go to Chicago, West Loop, Au Chevelle, it is amazing. So that's my guilty pleasure. I've eaten every night. I've had fish instead of a hamburger. Okay. But that was the day.
Ed, that's awesome. I love a good hamburger, but we're going to end it there,
so
guys.
Much.
Ed, thank you so much. You're so wonderful. You are officially our brother. We don't even have brothers, but you are officially
your
brothers
and
sisters. You have no free will. Sorry. And so, but thank you for being with us. We appreciate you more than you know. Jay, do you want to take us out?
Absolutely. Guys, until we confess again, we will see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Well, friends, that's a wrap on this week's confession. Thank you so much for listening in on UK Health Radio. But before you go, please take a moment to leave us a review and tell your friends about the Confessions show. Don't forget, visit our website to sign up for our newsletter and connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Pinterest, and Twitter. You'll also find the video recording of all our episodes on the Confessions website and our YouTube channel. We'll see you next Tuesday when we come together to confess again. Till then, take care of you.